Imagine, just for a second, stepping into a completely perfect replica of your life.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
So you walk into what looks exactly like your normal bank branch.
Right.
The security guard holds the door. He greets you by your first name.
Nice and welcoming.
Right, exactly. And you walk up to the teller, and they instantly know your account balance. They even casually bring up, like, the electric bill you paid yesterday.
Which builds that immediate trust.
Yeah. And then the branch manager comes out, shakes your hand, and ushers you into the vault to check on your safety deposit box.
Okay.
And then once you're inside, they slam the heavy metal door shut, lock it, and completely drain your accounts.
Wow. That's a terrifying visual.
Right. But the thing is, you wouldn't necessarily blame yourself for walking in there. I mean, every single signal around you, the uniform, the architecture, the really specific personal details, they knew it all, told your brain that the environment was totally safe and legitimate.
Yeah, and that makes total sense because, well, we rely on established markers of authority to just navigate the world, you know?
Right.
Our brains are fundamentally hardwired to look for those shortcuts.
Mm.
We trust the environment when all the visual and conversational signals just sort of line up perfectly.
Because checking everything would be impossible.
Exactly. Trying to verify every single interaction from scratch would be cognitively exhausting.
Yeah.
So we depend on these trusted patterns.
And that vulnerability is really the core of what we are diving into today. So welcome to the deep dive. We have our hands on this really extensive, honestly kind of terrifying report detailing the mechanics of the impersonation economy.
It really is a fascinating read.
It is. And our mission today is to help you understand exactly how modern criminal organizations are weaponizing the very fabric of our trust. They are taking familiar, trusted identities, whether that's your personal bank, the local police, or even the CEO of your company, and turning them into these highly efficient financial extraction machines.
It's a complete inversion of how society typically thinks about security, really.
Yeah.
The very institutions and signals we rely on to feel protected are the exact tools being used to compromise us.
Okay, let's unpack this because we really need to set a baseline here. When I used to hear the word impersonation, my mind automatically pictured like a lone operator.
Right, the guy in a basement.
Exactly, a lucky isolated phone call, some guy sitting in a basement dialing numbers at random, just hoping someone picks up and happens to believe they're speaking to the tax authorities.
Yeah, and the source material explicitly dismantles that outdated image. We really have to stop thinking of impersonation as a one-off trick or like a lucky guess.
It's so much bigger than that.
It's massive. The report lays down a very clear thesis. Impersonation is a highly sophisticated, reusable fraud technique. You can almost think of it as a plug-and-play module that criminals just insert into a massive organized infrastructure.
Wow.
Yeah, they deploy it across account takeovers, investment fraud, invoice diversion, and these really vast money mule operations. It is not a lucky phone call.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heavily industrialized process with specialized departments.
Which means the old advice we all grew up with, you know, like just look for the padlock icon on the browser or always check the caller ID. That advice is basically completely obsolete now.
Unfortunately, yes.
So by the end of this deep dive, you are going to know exactly how these invisible traps are constructed, how the underlying technology actually works, and why the landscape of deception has shifted so drastically.
And to really understand how these industrialized scams succeed at such a massive scale, we first have to examine the raw material these criminals are mining.
Which is us, right?
Exactly. The raw material is human psychology. I mean, financial services depend entirely on trusted identities and predictable customer behavior.
What do you mean by predictable behavior?
Well, think about what a bank expects from a quote-unquote good customer. You are supposed to recognize their brand. You're supposed to respond quickly to urgent security warnings. And you're supposed to follow the instructions of bank staff if fraud is occurring.
Oh, I see.
Right. So the criminal infrastructure simply exploits those exact same behavioral expectations.
So they aren't even building trust from scratch. They're just hijacking the billions of dollars in brand equity that legitimate institutions have already built.
They're borrowing the authority of the establishment. The criminals don't actually need you to trust them as individuals. They just need you to trust the bank they're projecting themselves to be.
That is so wild.
And the mechanism they use to reinforce that borrowed credibility is compromised personal data. We are talking about highly specific information scraped from social media, past corporate data breaches, or, you know, commercial data sets purchased on the dark web.
So when the phone rings, they aren't just opening with a generic, "Hello, sir."
No, not at all.
They're addressing you by your full legal name. They know who your telecommunications provider is. They might casually quote your approximate account balance or even cite a recent legitimate purchase you made at the grocery store.
Yeah, and while none of those individual data points actually proves the caller is genuinely sitting in a bank call center, the combined psychological effect is just overwhelming.
Because it feels so real.
Exactly. It makes the caller's narrative feel independently verified in your mind because they possess knowledge that you assume only your bank should have.
It's totally like a magician's misdirection. The magician gets you to focus on the flashy hand movement so you don't see the trick happening in the other hand.
That's a great analogy.
Thanks. Here, the criminal uses your own data as the flashy distraction. And the catalyst for all of this, the thing that forces the brain to look away from the red flags, is the weaponization of urgency.
Yes. Urgency overrides the prefrontal cortex, which is the logical, analytical part of your brain. The narrative presented by the fraudster is always an absolute immediate emergency.
Right. It's never just a casual chat.
Never. It's always, your account is actively being drained, or you have an unpaid tax bill with police en route, or a family member is in a hospital with no insurance, or even a highly confidential internal bank investigation that will collapse if you don't act right this second.
They force your brain into a total fight or flight state. Mm-hmm. It's like a twisted dark mirror version of a VIP concierge service. But wait, hold on. I have to challenge that premise a bit.
Sure, go ahead.
We are talking about global financial institutions here, right? They spend billions of dollars every single year on behavioral analytics and fraud detection algorithms.
They do.
So if I open my banking app while in this state of panic and try to transfer, say, £50,000 to a random safe account, my bank is going to freeze the screen. They're going to flash a massive red warning saying, "Stop, is this a scam?"
True.
You're telling me that a scripted lie from a panicked customer beats a billion-dollar AI security system?
It beats it because the security system is ultimately designed to defer to the authenticated user. If the user successfully clears the biometrics and insists on the payment, the bank has to process it.
Wow.
What's fascinating here is how the criminal actively anticipates the bank's billion-dollar algorithms and reframes those fraud controls into obstacles that actually validate the fake narrative.
Wait, how do they do that?
The bank warning doesn't break the psychological spell because the criminal tells the victim in advance that the warning is coming. They literally claim the warning is automated proof that the investigation is active and secret.
Oh my God. They weave the bank's own security friction right into their fictional story?
Yes. Furthermore, the report details how criminals actively stay on the line and heavily coach the victim on exactly what to say to bypass human bank staff.
That's terrifying.
The fraudster might claim that the employees at the local branch or even the fraud department are actually the ones under investigation. They'll say the internal staff are corrupt and attempting to steal the funds.
That is wild. They convince you that the very people actively trying to save your life savings are actually the bad guys.
Exactly. They instruct the victim to lie directly to the bank's fraud team. They provide a script, like when the fraud department asks why you are moving this huge sum of money, tell them it's for a property purchase or a family loan or a kitchen renovation.
So they have an excuse ready.
Right. So when the bank staff questions the victim, the customer appears relatively calm, provides a perfectly credible everyday explanation, and firmly insists the payment goes through. The bank's authentication checks fail because the victim's informed intent was entirely manufactured by the fraudster.
They turn you into a willing, active accomplice against your own financial protection.
Precisely.
But wait, if the criminal is holding a victim's attention on the phone while these algorithms are being bypassed, how are they manipulating the technical environment so flawlessly in the background? Because we definitely have to transition from the psychological manipulation to the sheer technological weaponry that makes this illusion hold up under pressure.
Let's do it.
I'm looking at this section on spoofing, and it completely undermines how we've all been taught to verify communication.
Yeah, caller identification and message appearance are now considered structurally compromised forms of authentication. Criminals use a technique called number spoofing. They manipulate the telecom signaling so that the incoming call legitimately appears on your smartphone screen as a trusted UK number, your specific financial institution, or a known public authority.
How does that actually work mechanically? Like, how can my phone literally say Barclays or Metropolitan Police when it's a criminal calling from another continent?
Well, the underlying telecom infrastructure was built decades ago, in an era of absolute trust, not verification. Think of caller ID like the return address on a physical envelope.
Okay.
You can write any address you want in the top left corner of an envelope, and the postal service will still deliver it. Voice over IP, or VoIP systems, allow callers to manually input whatever string of digits they want the receiving network to display.
And the network just believes it.
The network simply reads the metadata and displays it on your screen.
So the presence of correct branding or a familiar phone number absolutely does not verify the sender's identity at all.
It proves nothing. Text messages can be spoofed, so they drop directly into the existing genuine thread of SMS messages you already have from your bank.
That is so sneaky.
And with emails, they register domains that differ from the genuine address by just one single character, like using an R and an N next to each other instead of an M. They clone websites to perfectly reproduce logos, security language, and online banking interfaces.
And then there is the remote access software detail, which takes this to an entirely different level of intrusion.
Yeah. A supposed bank employee or tech support agent convinces the victim to install a screen sharing application, claiming they need to fix a security problem or remove malware.
And people do it because they're panicked.
Right. And once the victim grants access, the criminal isn't just looking at the screen. They actively manipulate what the victim sees on their own device.
They are literally altering your digital reality.
They utilize developer tools within the web browser to alter the local display of the banking page. They fabricate duplicate transactions, fake refunds, or terrifying negative account balances right before the victim's eyes. So when you log in and see your checking account is suddenly negative 50,000 pounds, the panic really sets in. And that engineered panic forces you to authorize the transfer they are demanding to correct the error.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because we cannot discuss technological weaponry without addressing the artificial intelligence multiplier. Reading through the AI section of the report, the sheer scale and automation of these operations are just staggering.
AI is a massive force multiplier for organized crime. The report makes a critical distinction. Artificial intelligence does not replace traditional social engineering. It supercharges the execution.
How so?
It radically improves the speed, the personalization, and the consistency of the attacks.
Right, because in the past, a phishing email might have had glaring grammatical errors, or a scam caller might have had a thick accent, or been reading from a spook that just didn't quite make sense in natural conversation. Those were the red flags we relied on. But today...
Criminal syndicates use large language models to produce flawlessly written, highly persuasive messages tailored to specific demographics. They can instantly translate scripts into dozens of languages perfectly.
It's practically flawless.
And they deploy AI chatbots to maintain simultaneous, convincing text conversations with hundreds of targets at once, only handing off to a human operator when the victim is ready to pay. And then there's the audio component, voice cloning.
The ability to imitate the voices of relatives or corporate executives using incredibly short audio samples pulled from social media profiles or corporate YouTube videos, it's crazy.
It really is.
They deploy deepfake audio for family emergency fraud, like getting a frantic call that sounds exactly like your grandson saying he's in jail.
And the practical risk outlined in the report is vital to understand here. The danger isn't that every deepfake is flawless or would pass a rigorous forensic examination in the lab.
Right.
It doesn't need to be perfect. The generated audio or video only needs to be credible enough to hold up during a highly emotional 10-second interaction.
Yeah, if you are panicked because your daughter is crying on the phone saying she's been in a car accident, you aren't critically analyzing the audio compression artifacts, you know, or listening for a robotic cadence.
Exactly.
You are just reacting to protect your child. Visual and audio familiarity can simply no longer be treated as definitive proof of identity.
Any sensitive instruction, especially involving finance or access credentials, absolutely must be confirmed through an independently established channel, regardless of what your eyes and ears are telling you in the moment.
Okay, so if the execution is this industrialized, they must have highly specific targeting strategies, right? They aren't just casting a wide net. They know exactly who they are going after and where the money is headed.
Very much so.
Let's look at the recovery scam detailed in the 2025 data, specifically involving the impersonation of the FCA, the Financial Conduct Authority.
Right. So the FCA is the regulatory body in the UK responsible for overseeing financial markets and protecting consumers. Criminals specifically impersonate the FCA because it represents the ultimate symbol of governmental authority and financial redress.
It's the ultimate trump card.
Yeah. In just the first half of 2025, the FCA received 4,465 reports of criminals falsely claiming to represent them.
And they are largely targeting a very specific, vulnerable demographic.
Almost two-thirds of those reports came from individuals aged 56 or above. The fraudsters craft a narrative claiming the FCA has successfully recovered assets from an illegal cryptocurrency wallet that was fraudulently opened in the victim's name.
Oh, that's so manipulative.
It gets worse. They then demand an advance fee claiming it is for tax liabilities, insurance, or legal processing in order to release the supposed funds to the victim.
And the absolute darkest part of this recovery scam mechanism is that they intentionally target individuals who have already lost money to previous scams.
Yes. Fraud networks aggregate and sell victim information amongst themselves on the dark web. If you have previously fallen for a scam, your data becomes a premium commodity.
That is just brutal.
Criminals understand the psychology of a prior victim. There is a desperate desire to be made whole, a vulnerability to the sunk cost fallacy. They know you want to believe the money has been found, which makes you highly susceptible to a fake regulator promising recovery.
It is just a relentless cycle. But they aren't only targeting the elderly or previous victims. The corporate exposure is massive, too. The report highlights CEO fraud, which operates on an entirely different level of sophistication.
The financial impact of corporate impersonation is really staggering. While the overall volume of CEO fraud cases declined slightly in 2025, it still cost businesses £5.6 million.
That's a huge number.
And more importantly, it retains the highest average loss per case of any main authorized push payment scam, sitting at over £28,000 per single incident.
Wow. And just to be clear for everyone, authorized push payment or APP scams are cases where the victim is manipulated into actively logging in and pushing the send button themselves, as opposed to a hacker just breaking in and stealing it.
Exactly.
So how are they tricking finance professionals into sending £28,000?
Well, they don't rely on guessing. They systematically compromise genuine business email mailboxes, often through initial phishing campaigns. Once inside the server, they don't strike immediately.
They just wait.
They sit quietly, sometimes for months, monitoring real email chains. They map out the company's organizational chart, they learn the tone of the CEO's communication, and they understand the invoicing cycles and project timelines.
So they really learn the rhythm of the business.
They wait for the exact moment when a high-value payment is due to a regular supplier. Then they seamlessly intervene in a legitimate ongoing email thread using the compromised internal account with an urgent request to update the supplier's bank routing details.
Oh, man.
To the employee processing the invoice, the email comes from the real thread, from the real email address, referencing a real invoice. It looks entirely routine.
So when that finance employee hits send on £28,000, where does that money actually go? Because an amount that large doesn't just sit in a standard checking account waiting to be flagged by the authorities.
The impersonation is what generates the payment. But a vast automated money mule infrastructure is what successfully converts the deception into untraceable proceeds.
How does that infrastructure actually move the money fast enough to evade detection, though?
The receiving accounts belong to recruited individuals, compromised shell businesses, or entirely synthetic identities created using stolen data purely to receive fraud proceeds.
Fake people, basically.
Right. And the moment the stolen money hits the initial mule account, algorithmic API triggers take over. The funds are instantly fractured, divided into dozens of smaller transactions, transferred across multiple different banking institutions to break the paper trail, and ultimately funneled into cryptocurrency exchanges.
So within minutes, the £28,000 is converted into Bitcoin or Tether and just moved offshore.
Exactly.
By the time the business realizes the real supplier never got paid, the money's totally gone. If the money fractures and disappears that fast, what happens to the victim? Let's look at the defense side of this, starting with the 2025 landscape figures from UK Finance.
The numbers are pretty intense.
Yeah, over 55.5 million was lost strictly to police and bank impersonation scams. And then add another 36.9 million lost to other organizational impersonation schemes. That is over 92 million across roughly 24,450 confirmed cases.
While those figures represent a slight decline from 2024, the scale of the financial hemorrhage really remains a systemic threat.
Now, in response to this, the UK government implemented mandatory APP scam reimbursement requirements in October 2024. So now, consumers who are tricked into sending money using Faster Payments or JPS, which are the primary systems we use in the UK to clear bank transfers instantly, they are generally entitled to reimbursement up to £85,000, usually within 5 business days.
That's right.
And the report noted that about 80% of recorded losses were ultimately returned to victims in 2025. On paper, that sounds like the problem is solved for the consumer.
It severely reduces the immediate financial devastation for the individual victim. Mm. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the macroeconomic reality is actually quite grim. Reimbursement is merely consumer protection. It is absolutely not crime prevention.
Okay, walk me through the mechanics of why that matters.
Consider the flow of capital. A victim is manipulated into sending £10,000 to a criminal network. A week later, under the new regulations, the bank reimburses the victim £10,000 out of its own operational capital.
Right, so the victim is financially restored.
But the criminal network still successfully extracted and kept the original £10,000 they moved through their mule accounts into crypto.
Oh, so the fraud economy still gets completely funded. The bank just simply absorbs the loss.
The systemic risk remains unchanged. The criminal syndicates are still generating massive revenues to fund further technological development, human trafficking, and cyber infrastructure.
It's a vicious cycle.
Therefore, for financial crime leaders, preventing the money from leaving the banking ecosystem in the first place is paramount. Stopping the mule accounts stops the monetization of the crime.
So what does this all mean for you, you know, navigating this digital landscape every day? We cannot just wait for banking regulators and telecom companies to patch the vulnerabilities of the internet. You need a personal control stack. And the source material lays out some very specific, actionable protocols.
Yes. The absolute gold standard of personal defense is independent verification. It is the only reliable control mechanism you possess.
The only one.
If you receive an unexpected request for money, access credentials, or a demand to install software, even if the caller ID matches perfectly, even if they know your exact account balance, you must break the engagement immediately. Hang up the phone. Close the email.
And crucially, do not use the contact information they provide in the message, right?
Never. You must reconnect through a known, independently verified channel. Turn your physical bank card over and dial the number printed on the back. Manually navigate to the institution's official website. Use the verified mobile app.
What about the one-time passcodes you get via SMS? People read those out all the time.
Read the accompanying text meticulously. Ensure the listed merchant, the recipient's details, and the exact monetary amount correspond precisely to an action you initiated. And never, under any circumstances, read a one-time code out loud to an unsolicited caller.
Right.
Remember the absolute baseline here. No legitimate bank, police officer, or regulatory body will ever instruct you to transfer money to a safe account to protect it. They will never ask you to lie to their own staff, and they will never send a courier to your physical address to collect cash.
And if you get suspicious text messages, forward them to 7726. Suspicious emails should be routed to the National Cybersecurity Center, the NCSC. And obviously, if you realize you have authorized a transfer or disclosed your passwords, contact your bank immediately through the number on your card. Minutes matter.
They really do.
So to quickly recap our deep dive today, impersonation is no longer a localized amateur effort. It is a highly managed AI-powered criminal industry that actively exploits our deeply ingrained reliance on systemic trust.
Look at that.
It uses our own digital footprints, our own behavioral psychology, and our own panic to bypass the technical security systems designed to protect us.
The perpetrators have successfully industrialized the manipulation of human perception.
Which leaves us with a necessary, if difficult, thought to process. This report maps out how easily generative AI can spoof voices, how deepfakes can manipulate visual reality, and how global criminal networks have successfully hacked the very concept of trust itself.
Yeah.
So if the entire foundation of our digital, financial, and social infrastructure relies on a baseline assumption of trust, how will society function a decade from now? What happens to commerce, to governance, to our personal relationships when we reach a point where we can literally no longer trust our own eyes and ears during any digital interaction?
It's a huge question.
It's an intimidating reality to navigate. But understanding exactly how the illusion is engineered is really the only way to ensure you don't fall for the trick. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you feel more informed, more prepared, a little more vigilant. Stay curious.